3HL powered by the Tennessee Lottery. Speaking of gold diggers, Todd Furman, our guy in Vegas, digging for gold in the desert. Todd, what's up?
They always say you can marry the first time for money and the second time for love, Brent. But out here in the desert, all you do is you chase that almighty dollar.
Wow.
I love
speaking
it.
The truth there.
You need to tweet that.
I like that quote, man. I'm going to steal that.
Speaking of tweets, you had a great idea that I used earlier. If you put all 14 SEC coaches on the Survivor Island, Survivor SEC, who wins?
Wait a minute. That was your idea and he tweeted it out?
Todd's idea.
Oh, okay. Yeah. I thought you said it was your idea, and he tweeted it out.
Blaine, I'm trying to get into television programming in case this gambling thing doesn't work out, so why not take the sports component of things, throw it into reality? In all honesty, Brent, I'm not sure who wins, but I will tell you, I think Nick Saban is the first one voted off because there's so much animosity from the other 13 coaches. You can't really form an alliance with him and think he'll do you any bit of good moving forward.
Ooh.
I'm thinking, Les Miles might win because people will keep him there just because he's fun to have around. You never know what he's going to say. So he might go all the way to the end. But Steve Spurrier is the guy I would worry about.
I was going to say, Les seems like he might be the most affable and able to get along with everybody else out there. I mean, you watch these media days and these coaches have great stories. Although, having heard Brett Bielema talk about the new language they're trying to forge down there in Fayetteville, I think it'd be interesting to try and see what he can accomplish because his stay at Arkansas might not last that long. He might need something else to do with his free time.
What did he say? Hoggies or something?
Yeah, hoggies, I believe, was the term. And he said he couldn't share it with anybody in the media because it might try and get back to him. I'm not quite sure if getting an 18-year-old to read his playbook in English isn't difficult enough, but trying to teach him a second language on top of that, hey, I tip my hat to him.
All right, let me start with hockey because that makes the most sense.
Oh, wow. Yeah.
Todd Furman, our guy.
Enlighten us.
At Todd Furman. All right, so the Preds have acquired a bunch of centermen, right? So does that help them?
I don't think
it That was in-depth knowledge there.
Yeah, it's not going to move the needle a ton. It does make them have a little bit more of an intriguing roster than what they initially had before. You really have to like the direction they're headed in. But as we've talked about so many times before, Brent, there just isn't that infusion of young talent right now capable of taking the Preds to the next level. You look at how deep the Western Conference is and all the teams that will be above them. As we've talked about, though, you have seen their number come down a little bit to win the Cup. I think it's somewhat ambitious when you look at the offshore books, but you still can find 100-1 widely available out here if you believe in that glass-half-full mentality. And I know all those loyal 3HL listeners that will make their trek to the desert sometime before football
season
starts.
Well, here's the thing about the Preds, right? They averaged, 2.46 goals per game, I think, was the number last year. If they could increase that, we all know what's on the back end of that defense. So, I like the coaching move. I like James Neal. I'm really anxious to see him out there, former 40-goal scorer. So maybe if they could be a little more productive offensively, they could move on up like George and Weezy.
I'm definitely curious to see how James Neal acclimates to life in Nashville. It was a curious deal from Pittsburgh, but I know they wanted to try and bring on a little bit more toughness for their roster. But Neal, an elite scorer, the question that you have to wonder, did he benefit immensely from playing with that talented supporting cast in Pittsburgh that he won't quite have on the offensive end? As you allude to, clearly the Preds definitely an upgrade, getting a healthy Pekka-Rinne back between the pipes, something they desperately lacked last year. When you can't score goals and you can't keep them out of your own net, it's not exactly the recipe for long-term success.
No doubt. Todd Furman, our guy in Vegas. If you have specific questions for Todd anytime, anywhere, about any game, hit him on Twitter at Todd
Furman. Or you can just call him directly.
Or just call him, yeah. His phone number is...
If you guys are tweeting out my phone number, I'm going to be in big trouble once SEC football starts and I offend all those different fan bases.
No. That's right.
Well, we haven't talked a little bit about NBA, and we all know LeBron James has gone to Cleveland, but, we know their odds sway. But tell us their odds as well as the Miami Heat's odds and who will probably be in the Eastern Conference final representing them.
Yeah, you look at these Cleveland prices, and, of course, the number continues to come down on the expectations for what the Cavaliers can do. Obviously, getting LeBron in the fold had that number go as low as 4-1. You look at them right now, second behind only the Spurs to win the NBA title. The Heat number, though, has been on the move. You talk about a team that's quietly flying under the radar now, obviously losing LeBron, but getting a bunch of talent in Luol Deng. They bring back Dwayne Wade. Of course, Chris Bosh re-signed there. Their number got as low as 100-1 or as high, depending on how you want to look at it. I've seen a lot of the books in town and offshore right now listing the Heat at 30-1 to win the NBA championship. So if you're able to gobble up 50-1 to win the East, that may be the most attractive play out there when you consider they could arguably be the second-best team behind Cleveland, at least on paper right now.
All right, before I get into these SEC question, which is kind of deep, and you have to be long-winded, Tiger Woods is back, and I think the Open Championship or something in Liverpool?
British Open, yeah.
British Open, yeah. So what are the odds of him even being in contention?
Tiger Woods is 15-1 right now. It was awfully interesting. Had a chance to talk to one of the top odds makers out here as far as golf's concerned from the LVH, a guy by the name of Jeff Sherman. He said they dropped Tiger's odds all the way to 25-1 and took a couple big bets. Nothing that he'd describe as sharp on Tiger at 25, but as a result, you have to bring Tiger right back down to 15. He, of course, creates the most liability of any golfer in the field right now, and at last chat, there were about 15 to 20 more tickets on him than anybody else. When you look at the favorites, with shorter odds than him, Rory McIlroy and Adam Scott there, I'd make the case that Henrik Stenson at 15-1 provides real intriguing value as well. The other interesting thing to keep in mind, you have seen some sharp money enter the head-to-head betting matchups in regards to fading Martin Kaymer. A lot of people believe betting markets really overvaluing him off that outstanding performance we saw from him at the U.S. Open.
Well, now we have the SEC Media Days going on, and actually SEC is king of football, and they feel like they'll get all four teams probably in the playoff picture. But you tell us, who are the teams primed to get the top four to get into the playoffs, and then give me your top four, and we're using four because that's who makes the playoffs, the top four who have the highest ranking in the SEC.
I think what's been interesting, Blaine, is we saw Alabama open as an underdog to make that supposed Final Four for college football, but that price has since swung. They are now favored to get into that mix. You look at the entire college football landscape, and of course, Oklahoma's schedule very favorable outside of a tricky date at TCU. Ohio State, a great opportunity to run the table. The Pac-12, maybe Oregon or UCLA comes out of there unblemished. And then, of course, there's Florida State, who's got the highest win total of any team in the country, set at 11.5. It begs the question, could a one-loss or even a two-loss SEC champion find a way to jump four undefeated teams? Of course, I don't think that's what we'll see. And when you look at the odds to win the SEC championship game, Alabama, the overwhelming favorite at a little better than even money, right now listed at 5-4. Georgia, actually, the second favorite at 7-2. And then you get into a bit of a logjam. Auburn at 4-1, LSU at 7, South Carolina at 7. And I think the value pick, or one that may grow as far as trendiness is concerned as we get through the summer, Florida at 15-1 to come out to win, and then Ole Miss at 12-1, assuming Bo Wallace takes the next step in his development.
Since we're on the SEC, we want to talk about the two local teams here, Vandy and UT. What is the over-under on how many wins they'll get in? Will both teams get into a bowl this year?
Well, Tennessee listed at 100-1 to win the SEC title, and Vandy at 200-1. You look at the win totals for both of those teams. Vanderbilt, the beneficiary, more of a soft schedule. They should be 4-0 in that non-conference lot. You're looking at their win total at 6. You do have to lay a price if you want to go under that number. And Tennessee, depending on where you look, 6 with heavy juice to the under, or 5.5. I think with their non-conference schedule, a home date against Utah State, a road trip against Oklahoma, them getting to the postseason would be a huge step in the right direction for a team that may be more talented than their final record will indicate.
Are they favored against Utah State, though?
They are favored against Utah State. It's a question of where that number will end up settling. I've seen some early projections from odds makers out here making Tennessee a 6.5, 7-point favorite there.
Good stuff, Todd. Appreciate it.
Always a pleasure, guys.